Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Comment s'appelles-tu?
I don't speak any French.
ça va bien.
Sans un cordon bleu. I can speak French about as well as they can in the
yeah. Château Marmont.
movie. There were some good ones in that little scene.
yeah. So, hi, Dan.
Hello.
Yeah, we are, of course, speaking in French because we are talking about the offensively French Canadian Super Troopers 2, which is, I have to say it that way because there's only so much of that where you're just like, this is kind of funny, and then there's the rest of it where you're just like, oh, not funny. You're just gonna keep doing that though, aren't you? And then it
Well,
just rides through the rest of the movie.
it's so unfunny that it comes around again and then becomes funny again and then becomes unfunny again. And then you have to think about the fact that they probably know some Canadian people, so they're probably doing it pr especially bad on purpose just to screw with their friends. So then it becomes slightly funny again.
Well, I mean, they one of the Mounties, Will Sasso, is a Canadian American actor.
I believe he's not the only one as well.
Yeah, and he doesn't talk like that. He's affecting a French Canadian accent for this because apparently they're trying to make it. Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So we're talking about Super Troopers 2, and if you can't tell from my dismissiveness, it's not a good movie, and I don't really recommend you watch it. But it's on HBO for free, so we decided to watch it as part of our I don't know, Year of Regrets or something. Not that we have a theme, but.
Well, let's you say not a good movie that you can't recommend, but I mean, honestly, are you really recommending anyone watch the first one either?
You know, I can't say that I am. I'm recommending that for people who watched the first one, who were fans of it, that includes myself and also you, and we've talked about that movie before on this podcast. That for fans of that first movie, that this maybe does not measure up to what you might expect for the evolution of the sophistication of the writing and the everything to have happened since that first movie.
I don't know. I feel like if you've been following any of Broken Lizard's evolution since the original Super Troopers, whether that be the other Broken Lizard movies or just sort of seeing Jay Chandrasekhar around for the past few years, he did some stuff with the Jackass Boys. This feels like a logical evolution for them, and there's a little bit of fun in it, but it's certainly no high-minded masterpiece.
No, and I think the only other Broken Lizard movie I've seen is Beer Fest, which we also discussed for this podcast, and I didn't like that movie either. It has kept me away from seeking out other Broken Lizard movies. I think that there is just something entertaining about the first Super Troopers, because of that time in my life when you're in college, and also the fact that they didn't have a budget to waste on things they probably shouldn't have filmed. That kind of left you with something a little more, I don't know, not put together well or good or anything like that, but just like you could appreciate it more easily. But whereas something like this, which is a ostensibly a more polished production at this point in their careers, it's like, oh, this is not actually what I think anybody was really looking forward to if you were fans of Super Troopers and you've gone on with your life since then. And I know that there are people who probably haven't seen the first Super Troopers movie, and like I said, I don't recommend seeing the first one because turns out some problems in the first one as well. But I can look past it because I was a fan of it in a time when I did not see those problems. So that is convenient for me.
You had to be there.
Yes, you had to be there before you knew better. And I know that you are a fan of the first Super Troopers, as we had discussed, and you are also a fan of Beer Fest. Enough so that we watched that for the podcast.
Was that at my insistence that we watched Beerfest?
I don't know if you insisted necessarily. I think you just said it was on streaming somewhere and we should watch it.
But it was your first time watching it for the podcast?
Yes. Because you... I saw the trailer for Club Dread and I was like, this is not good. And
it is so trash. Club Dread remains hot trash.
Yeah, so I never watched that. But you had also told me that Club Dread was hot trash, so we never watched it for this podcast.
I mean, aside from the fact that they somehow managed to get Bill Paxton in there, yeah, it's... the one thing about the Broken Lizard folks that I think the reason Super Troopers 1 works so well is they have this sort of like casual silliness about them. I don't really know how to describe it other than like they're not really trying to sell punchlines and jokes per se. You know, they're just they're being ridiculous, oftentimes sort of like under their breath, particularly Jay. Well, I guess we should call him Thorny. Anytime they try to get like more energetic and start doing like bits on camera, that's when stuff doesn't really sell as well as the other comedy that is more understated and these just sort of ridiculous characters doing absurd things. And I feel like some of those other movies, Club Dread in particular, which tried to be a very sort of campy horror flick, really steered into like the over the topness, and it just did not work so much with these particular actors. But I think they're kind of returning to form a bit here with the characters. I mean, these feel like the characters from the first one. It's good to see them doing things. Farva is more Farva than he was in a good way, and I think Mac does a good job, and then some of the other characters are just running around doing things.
Yeah, and I think my problem with this is mainly not the characters themselves, but everything around the characters, because these characters, like you said, are just sort of like almost a year later, I would say, from their characters, despite the actual time that has elapsed. Like,
right. Speaking of the time elapsed, I was mentioning it in the thing there, the Slack, when we were talking, but I guess we can talk more about the production of this later. But this movie was actually written in 2009. So the time gap is all over the place when you try to compare where the characters came from, when this was written, when it was actually shot, and when it was released.
Yeah. When was the first Super Troopers again? I forget. 2009.
I thought it was 2000 or 2001. Let me look if I can find things. Wikipedia is very bad for this.
Yes, Wikipedia is notoriously difficult to search for things.
Well, I'm just trying to click a link. Yeah, 2001.
Yeah. So, long time has elapsed between that and the sequel. And they did these other movies, which... as I said, either I didn't see or did not like. And so I was reticent. And I think that a lot of the things that I don't think work in a movie like Beerfest, for example, are the fact that the world that they're in is ridiculous. Whereas one of the things I liked about the first Super Troopers is that the world was not that ridiculous. The world was kind of sensible. It was them. They were ridiculous.
It was like small town Vermont or whatever. So they played up the silliness of the small city vibe. But yeah, I guess it still seemed relatively realistic.
Yeah, well, not realistic, but like the stakes of everything are small. Like nothing's really that big or broad, and the characters themselves, the ensemble cast, is really they're the ones that are the broad, ridiculous things, and so they can act against the characters they pull over, et cetera, and those people can be like the straight guy, like Jim Gaffigan, when they do the famous meow bit, which is in this movie, sort of. But like that is a situation where you can appreciate sort of their juvenile sense of humor because everyone around them is more reasonable and thrown off by their juvenile nature. Like they don't know how to process necessarily the silly pranks that they're pulling. Whereas a movie that is taking place, let's say, more than a decade later from that, is kind of not in the same situation. It's more in the beer fest kind of a thing where it's like the world itself is also broad and big, where all of the characters they're interacting against are also supposed to be jokes as well. So that doesn't work for me as well.
Oh, so okay, I guess you're sort of dancing around it here, but I'm going to go ahead and assume that you did not particularly enjoy the air quotes bad guys of this movie.
No, I did not care for that at all. We'll just get the loose structure of this out of the way. The intro to this is 9 minutes of a dream sequence.
And it's kind of a good dream sequence.
Nope. I hate it. I hate it so much. It really felt like 9 minutes of a Harold and Kumar movie. Or Dude, Where's My Car? More specifically, because we have Sean William Scott.
Both of those things are right in our wheelhouse.
Yeah, but not in the wheelhouse of good. They're in the wheelhouse of evil. But the thing that really just annoys me about that is just it's so broad and so over the top. But also, they spent lavishly on trying to achieve this ridiculousness that you're just like, why? What is happening? Like, this isn't Super Troopers. This isn't what I would want to watch the rest of the movie be. And then you're like relieved when it turns out to be a dream sequence at the end of it.
I mean, did you have no inclination that it was a dream sequence while it was happening?
Oh, when Mac died, I knew it was a dream sequence. but it was the same sort of thing as like in Beerfest when the actor who plays Farva dies and like Monique kills him in the beer vat thing. Is that, yes. Am I remembering this correctly?
The identical twin.
Yeah, and then the identical twin comes back for the rest of the film. That's just not what I look for in this. Like, they don't do that well, I don't think.
Well, I mean, the thing about these movies is that there's the jokes, and then there's, like, the meta jokes. And, like, that's one of those meta jokes where it's, like, not only are the characters being silly in the movie, but, like, as a movie, they're, like, they're making jokes at the audience expense at the same time. That, like, that's a joke that the creators slash characters would find funny in a movie, and then it's also in the movie that they're living in.
Yeah, but you know, I guess that comes from them being this sort of comedy group where they're all buds and they're just throwing stuff around, and so you get these writer room vibes of like, wouldn't it be funny if such and such happened? And then it's just in the script or improv on set. And then we see it in the movie, and it doesn't necessarily make tight, logical, well edited sense in context of everything else. But that's neither here nor there. The first 9 minutes of this.
I think the funniest part of the whole 9 minute dream sequence, though, is the fact that afterwards when he wakes up and he's like, and he walks over to Mac and goes, I had the craziest dream. And Mac says, who are the cops this time? And he says, Stifler and Damon Wayans Jr. So this is clearly like a thing for him, which I found amusing more so than really the dream sequence itself. Although when Mac's dead body lands in the tree, still giving the two thumbs up, that was pretty good.
But it's just so over the top that I can't appreciate that. Especially if you look at it in context of the first film, where nothing really hit that supernatural dream sequence level of that, you know?
Well, that's because they didn't have any money to do that, but yeah.
Yeah, but that goes back to an earlier thing I had said where it's a good thing they didn't have any money. But, I think, honestly, the movie would be better if you cut the first 9 minutes of this movie out. But we can agree to disagree on that.
Well, I mean, they kind of need to do... They don't need to. They wanted to do something fun to say, like, here's where you think they're going to be. And then they do that sort of fake thing where they're showing the state troopers' feet. And they're like, oh, all right, maybe they're still state troopers. And they're like, oh, no, it's Stifler. So they're a band on tour now for some reason. This is weird. And then they die. And you're like, oh, that's not what they would be doing if they weren't cops. Also, they're working in construction. So they had a little bit of fun playing with that, but you know, it was their prerogative to take that particular route.
Yeah, well, because also we have the juvenile humor of they almost kissed, and also you guys are going to go in the back and have sex with Juicy Lucy, and they make a plan to divide up between the. I don't know how to say this in a podcast appropriate way. They are going to divide up. This person, a human being named Juicy Lucy, according to their whims. And then they are kicked out of the back of the bus, and then that starts a whole thing with the cop car is being chased and gunshots, and then that's why they die.
The podcast friendly way to say it would be they called dibs.
Ugh. It was just, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, so this is a dream sequence and it doesn't matter in the context of the movie. So it's just like, why did it need to be so crass? And like,
it's Rabbit's dream. And, you know,
I guess it makes me think less of Rabbit, but,
it makes you think less of him than you had previously thought of him.
Yes. Also, Rabbit looks like he maybe will be getting his AARP card someday soon.
Yeah, there are a couple of close-ups when they first meet Rob Lowe where you're like, oh boy, this is not a year after the first movie.
No, there is time elapsed. But
Eric Stolhansky, born in 1968, age 50.
See, look at me, my predictive powers. Anyway, he wakes up in, I don't know, a thing of Pink Panther insulation, and Farva is there, who appeared in the dream sequence towards the end as this sort of weird, annoying character.
Yeah, because of course he's not in the dream sequence because nobody likes him and they want him to leave.
Right, and so then this is reality bleeding into his dream, and then in reality, Farva's waking him up from his nap at the construction site, and we actually get what I think is a pretty funny scene with Farva at the construction site, because while I don't appreciate the juvenile humor that is attributed to all the other characters surrounding the main cast, I still appreciate Farva being so obnoxious and unlikable that he does all of the irritating, horrible jokes that you would kind of expect him to do, and you are entertained by it because he starts making jokes about caulk, because they're going to caulk. He's got his caulk in his hand. And so he just keeps saying it over and over again. And the characters are frustrated and they don't think it's funny. And you and the audience are entertained because it isn't funny. Like, if you know people like this in your life where they just beat a joke to death and you're just like, this isn't like a funny thing for you to be doing right now. Unfortunately, this movie suffers from the same thing when they go on to, you know, make fun of Canadian accents and say sorry a lot, a whole bunch, a lot, where you're like, this is not funny. You're doing the cock joke, but like in for real in the movie universe, and no one's laughing at it. Anyway, this construction scene is entertaining. And then they go from there to meet up with the captain, who is in Canada, so that they can do their fishing vacation thing. And Ursula from the first movie drops off Foster in a sidecar, which is always hilarious because sidecars are never not funny. This is all we see of Ursula. It's her scene here where she drops him off. It's like, I don't think she was busy. Like, you guys could have written her into more of the film.
I think she had other things to do.
Yeah, well, she... I think the movie suffers for it because it would have been nice to actually have them mature by having something from their previous movie, like carrying through, like Ursula from the Sperbury Police. But
I guess she's on a FaceTime video call later with Foster. By the way, I do love the one scene in this movie which is very sort of meta, where Foster and Farva are driving together and they actually go like, yeah, I realize we've never had a one-on-one conversation before. He's like, yeah. It's like, no, like, we've literally never been alone together before. He's like, yeah, why would we? You're boring. And then the scene ends with him going, you still dating that blonde cop chick?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. And I would like to say, on the Farva thing, Farva is, you know, being Farva and irritating and ridiculous, but I feel like they somehow made him more likable to the audience than they did in the first movie. Like, he's still annoying the characters in the movie as he normally does, and they're playing pranks on him as a result because they all hate him, but he's funnier to me because I don't know, maybe his shenanigans have gotten a little bit cheeky and a little bit fun.
Well, there's something self-referential in the shenanigans later, shall we say the chicanery, and
place so- wishes it was shenanigans.
Like, they're like, Farva is making fun of Farva in a way, as written, not as acted. And so you get a very spot-on portrayal of Farva, but also he's doing like Farva to the extreme, and like all of the little Farva ticks that are irritating in just like the perfect way.
I guess the difference would be, I think, in the first movie, Farva was like a bitter, angry person, and he took it out on people with terrible pranks that everyone hated. In this movie, his pranks are giving him joy, and he's having fun at every other character's expense. So there's joy in Farva. He's being very Farva, but because it amuses him, not just because like he's angry at the whole world.
Yeah, there were glimpses of that in the first movie, but I think it's definitely more even here, where he is enjoying himself regardless of whether or not any other character in the scene is enjoying themselves.
He's a site supervisor, so he's, you know, he's got a little bit of power when they're at the construction site.
Yeah, and they are happy to get away from him when they go on their fishing trip, and then they cross the border to Canada with what's his face from Kids in the Hall,
Bruce McCullough,
who is probably maybe the least busy of the Kids in the Hall actors.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, maybe Scott Thompson, but he lets them through the border in a kind of weird drawn out scene, but it's mainly just like, we have Bruce McCullough for a day, so we're gonna shoot this. But then they get to the place, and it's the wrong place, but no, it's not really, this is their new headquarters. And then
they were played Throw the Tire on the Roof.
No,
I've never got tired of it. Like, and that's what I mean with there's like the subtle, stupid humor, because they're just sort of like casually walking away, muttering to each other these stupid jokes. And that's where it really just feels like this is what it would be like if you follow the Broken Lizard crew around with a video camera, and those are the jokes they would be telling each other and having a little bit of fun. And it's like that's what's underlying these cop characters, that sort of makes them feel like human beings who just happen to have badges.
Yeah, it's just the tightening of that, because we have them go in and they talk to Brian Cox, returning again. Then Linda Carter is there as the governor, and she establishes that they're going to be transitioning this part of Canada over to America. Little known fact, there are parts of the Canadian-American border that are in dispute still to this day. But anyway, they're going to be transitioning this part over to be American, and so they need to establish a police force and transition from the Mounties that are there to them. So she gets the most incompetent people she can find, I guess.
They know the border. They're familiar with it. You know, it's Governor Jessman again.
Yeah. And she helpfully gets the rest of the team, which is Farva. And so Farva enters and is annoying. And then there's a montage of them miraculously cleaning the station.
I have to say, for the record, just like when Farva does show up and like everyone's like, oh god, they called him, and he's just like, he's doing a one-man show, like telling similar to the Calk jokes and like dancing in front of people, and then he boots a soccer ball right into Mac's face. I burst out laughing because I could not help myself. Like there are a few moments in this movie where it goes right down deep to the juvenile funny bone in me, and just I can't help not laugh. Most of them have to do with like people getting hurt in very slapstick ways, but you know, that's just me being a you know, dumb desert person or whatever.
You should do a Super Troopers desert edition where they have them move to Arizona to secure some part of Arizona for some reason.
Oh no, that would go terribly wrong. Although they very briefly, like in terms of like balancing callbacks to the first movie and balancing new material, they do have a bit in here where when they're addressing, I'm jumping a little ahead, when they're addressing the local town folk, and the local town people are very upset that the Americans are going to come tell them what to do. Well, one of the Canadians points at him and says, next thing you know, this guy's going to tell us we're going to have to start eating tortillas. And he points at himself like, what, me? And yeah, that goes back to the, you know, I'll take two chinchillas and no guacamoles or whatever from the first movie.
Yeah.
I'm a little sad none of the, well, I guess all of the original Spurberry police are in jail now, right?
Yeah. I mean, I quite liked whatever the character actor was. That was the police chief, the corrupt police chief from the first one. But it's fine. The unfortunate thing here is that they are introduced to the Mounties, and they're played by Will Sasso and two other guys. And
Hayes MacArthur is a guy I have seen in a few places. Where is he from? I'm trying to remember. I really like him. He's on Angie Tribeca primarily these days.
Is that a real show? Or is that Angie like Tribeca? One of those TBS things where like they make it up and you don't know?
Angie Tribeca is it might even be a TBS show, but it's Rashida Jones fake cop drama.
Oh.
It's like it's supposed to be like a Law and Order, but it's like ridiculously absurd. Like Police Squad levels of absurd. You should check out a little bit of it, you know, in small doses. Oh, it is a TBS show, yeah. It's entertaining. It's entertaining, but yeah, he's from that show. He plays a New York cop. And then Tyler Labine, I feel like I've seen him someplace. Oh, he's from what is that one movie? You always see like gifs of it online or whatever. It's some really long, ridiculous name, something or other versus the something something. Tuck and Dale versus Evil. Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Yeah. Anyway.
Never heard of it.
It's from 2010. It's a movie. Okay. It's got the redheaded guy from all the Joss Whedon movies.
Alan Tudyk?
Yeah, he's in there. Okay. He's the other lead.
All right. I believe you.
I'm glad you were able to get that from my description.
Well, it was kind of easy with the process of elimination. But I'm a leaf on the wind. Watch out. I soar.
No, see, I was going to go Knight's Tale because that's my preference because I don't like Joss Whedon stuff. But
and you weren't going to talk about Alpha? Spoiler alert for Dollhouse. But
what's Alpha and what? Wait, oh, Dollhouse is that one that he did with what's her name, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That didn't last long, right?
No.
It was like Alias, but like not with spies.
What was funny about that show is like imagine Eliza Dushku is your star and she's supposed to be able to portray multiple characters because she's a human body that can be reprogrammed to suit any situation or circumstance. Then imagine everyone else on the show out-acting her in circles because she has like two things that she can do and like accents that she can affect to portray like character traits. It was
like
not...
Chuck, where he spent like three seasons just like having a shocked look on his face.
I don't know. I don't watch Chuck.
Pretty sure it's over now.
Yeah. All I ever heard were complaints about the Subway advertisements. But
Subway advertisements.
Yeah. Apparently, they did a lot of promotional consideration. That is neither here nor there. This movie has the meeting of the town hall and that doesn't go well. And Rob Lowe
is the mayor of the town
and he's awful. Just well, every scene with him is excruciating. I don't know about you, but I didn't laugh at a single thing that had to do with Rob Lowe. I thought that things in the same scene might be entertaining, but just him himself delivering his lines or doing actions, not funny.
Him has Guy Lafranc.
Yeah.
There are a couple moments where he says a few lines that amuse me, mostly when he's just like, he's being, again, very stereotypically Canadian and very polite and stuff, but he's also cursing and like, you know, being vulgar at times. And it's occasionally amusing, the juxtaposition of that. But mostly I think the amusing part of him is the fact that they got Rob Lowe to do these things. Which I guess is a throwback to the first one where you go like, really? They got Brian Cox, huh? To do some shenanigans and
well,
I
compare it more to Jürgen Prochnow's role in Beer Fest.
A good one.
Where you're like, this is poorly written, but they got Jürgen Prochnow to do it. So that's something. This is kind of the same thing where it's like, it's only interesting because Rob Lowe is doing it. And if Rob Lowe was not in this movie and it was someone else, then you wouldn't find what he was saying or doing funny. Or maybe you would, because somebody would have a different hot new take on it. But
he's a ridiculous character, and he's got some charisma. And I think that's the point of the character, is that he's supposed to just be the charismatic ex hockey player who now is the mayor of a town / mm-hmm. runs a brothel.
Yeah, that brothel scene. So they decide that they're going to do these ride-alongs with the Mounties and kind of get a feel for things. And this does not go well for obvious reasons, because the Mounties don't like them and because they're not used to stuff. And a lot of these jokes in this part of the movie center on the metric system and changing signs.
Yeah, you got the two teams that split up. You got the team that goes with the Mounties to the brothel, that ends up getting into a giant fight, getting beat up by hookers. And then you've got the other group that is replacing the kilometers per hour signs with miles per hour signs, and getting yelled at by people driving past and doing their best. I don't even know what you would call that sort of straight man comedy, where he's like, I'm not sure if he's calling me fat or skinny, because I don't understand the metric system.
Yeah, because
then that leads into the kids all hopped up on goofballs, crashed into the sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is where you get your drug contraband thing, just like mm-hmm. the first movie. And they find a stash
by tying ropes to the kids and using them like bloodhounds running through the forest. What does he say? Like, show me where you got these, and I'll let you play with my taser. And the kid runs around, and then. I did like when they were running through the forest, and he says, keep an eye out, because this is the kind of image that could go viral.
Yes.
kids on leashes running through the forest.
Because that's honestly what I was thinking when I was watching it. Is it just like, you would film this? And Ed, they say that, like, you don't want this to be seen. So they find all the stuff, and they take it back, and they complain that nobody wants to do tests on it, that Canadian labs don't want to do tests on it. They say that it's America's thing, and America says, no, it's Canadian stuff, and so they want to do tests. And Brian Cox is like, oh, I'll get a call into Montpellier and get this taken care of. And he wanders off set, and then everybody in the room just takes a random pill so that they can figure out what the side effects are and then determine
Favre is like, I'm going to do it because I'm a cretin, and I don't need no lab to tell me. By the way, I like the way he takes the pill and starts like violently chewing it. And then I had the same reaction that Mac does in the scene itself, where he goes, you swallow M&M's whole, but you chew pills. What is the matter with you? And he's just like, yeah, I'm a complicated guy.
The green ones make me horny.
Yeah, exactly. Because again, it's just like, what is the easiest joke? And that's Favre's joke. But the scene where he's swallowing the M&M's whole, it's just like, it makes my throat hurt. And it's just like, you're doing this on purpose. Like, why? It looks like it hurts. Stop that.
But, I mean, honestly, there are people in your life who will come across that do weird food things. And you're just like, why? Why are you doing this? Like, stop it. And this is
the same place anyway, right? Yeah. Like that argument.
So like that was mildly entertaining, to be perfectly honest with you. And the green ones make me horny is just like the kind of oversharing you don't really need.
That's just an old joke that everyone says.
Yeah, but they all
take one of the five pills or four pills or whatever it is to see what the reactions are. And then the next amusing bit of the film is where they're all reacting to the various pills that they took and trying to figure out what they were. And of course, Farva is just like completely passed out on some sort of barbiturate painkiller thing. And what does he hit him with? He hits him with like a big binder a bunch of times.
Yeah, because he's numb. Honestly,
that's not the funniest part. When he says, "I got any more of those fly strips around here? I want to make him a headband." It's just, oh, they tie a fly strip just covered in dead flies to far of his forehead. It was great.
But I don't really care for the flow of Scotia. The overly produced drug ad for it was mm-hmm. not great.
It's a female Viagra.
Yeah, and then Thorny takes this for the rest of the movie, and they just have, like, you're turning into a woman jokes, mainly about him being temperamental and not logical
and losing his sense of direction and not knowing how to drive and
his mustache disappearing and then lactating at the end of the film, which I don't love. I wish they had gone in a different direction with whatever they were doing.
They tried to play it up. in the beginning of the movie where he's like lumberjack mountain man with his shirt off and he's all buff and stuff, and then as he progresses he's very interested in taking female hormone pills. And then yeah, it's just that all of the jokes are very easy jokes that come after that, but you know, whatever.
I hesitate to call them jokes. It's just like, this is just like the easy thing you would write down and then be like, is this funny? And then there was not that examination that occurred.
The mustache wig was mildly amusing, but other than that, I think the rest of it was just stupid.
Yeah. And it's sad because he's directing the film, so nobody can step in and be like, you know, not great. But
yeah, you would think like most of the jokes are pretty quick throwaway jokes, but this is one joke that basically arcs from the beginning of the movie all the way to the end, and you're like, do we really want to spend an hour and 40 minutes paying off this one particular joke about taking these pills?
I have to imagine that when they're in the writer's room and they were doing the first act, they were just like, wouldn't it be great if he was lactating in the third act? And so then you get this, and it's just like, that's not worth it. That's not the funny joke to do for this. So I don't know what they're thinking. But
just, and again, they're trying to play off character too, because remember, he is all that is man from the first movie and stuff. Yeah. So
yeah, well, and I would have appreciated that more had there been, I guess, more front loading of that, or this character examining perhaps his views on these issues. But he doesn't do anything with this. He just is these things when it's happening, and so it's just like, okay, well, what are we as the audience supposed to be taking away from your behavior? So I don't know. I don't appreciate the way they executed that one. I think that was a swing and a miss. But
yeah, the examination would have been helpful. Really, his reason for continuing to do so is that he enjoys the sexual component of the pills.
Yes, I believe he says orgasm. But
can you say that on a podcast? Is that allowed on a podcast?
Sure. I think it's something in the dictionary, so it's fine. But
is that how it works?
I mean, if you're listening this far into an episode on Super Troopers 2, are you really going to be filing a complaint?
Can we hit like a ding bell now and then suddenly start cursing?
I don't think that's how that works, but I could put a marker.
Well, no, we're this far into the movie. That's just what I'm saying.
I'm putting
that's what you said.
Marker.
No, don't mark.
It's what you said. I'm putting a marker for you. This is your marker. This is the
don't mark me. I didn't do anything. I'm just asking the question.
Marker.
I'm just asking. It's an honest question. Just answer the question.
Well, I entered it. It's Dan's marker. That's what it's called.
Well,
my marker file.
I didn't ask for any sort of action. I just asked for an answer to the question.
Well, it's in there at 37 minutes and 10 seconds. Dan's marker.
Well. Yeah.
So go ahead and curse, I guess. But no, the thing with this is, it's not that funny. They don't examine it. Some of the other side effects from the other pills, like we already mentioned, Farva goes numb. And then I forget what Rabbit's thing was, but he was
Rabbit
agitated.
Rabbit was on roids. He was doing a lot of push-ups and threatening to harm people.
That's not how that works.
What, you don't take one?
Yes, I will have one steroid, please, so that I can do some push-ups.
And then get very angry. And then, Foster is, what is he on?
Acid.
No, Mac's on acid.
Oh, Mac's on acid. I forget what Foster was on.
He's just very relaxed for some reason.
Yeah, but Mac is on acid, and then he has a horrible dream sequence where everybody's in geisha makeup and
kabuki masks.
This is offensive, and I feel like everyone knew better, but they did it anyway. So not great for you guys.
The kabuki thing is like 5 seconds long, and it's a drug hallucination. So they didn't go as crass as they possibly could with it. Like, they didn't keep that going. They're just like, he's hallucinating and runs out of the room, and you're like, all right then.
But bonus points for brevity, I guess. But
the giggling and covering the mouth as he exits the room was a little much, but all right.
Well, but here's the thing, it's like they're writing the movie. This is this is not a literal side effect of acid. Like, they could have written whatever they wanted for his dream sequence.
I mean, you know.
And they selected this, so.
I'm not an expert in hallucinogenics. I've never taken acid myself, personally.
Me neither.
It'd be surprising to listeners, but. I don't know what degree the hallucinations are based off of character, or they're just like things that happen.
Yes, obviously, Canadian acid gives you geisha hallucinogenic results because of the way it's formulated in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
No,
and it causes your captain to pull his own head off or whatever.
Yeah, and then he does naked cartwheels. Which
oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Which I thought they would paint out more of the things you could see, but I guess they didn't want to.
No,
but,
no. It's a very Mac move, too, because he was, you know, again, naked in the first one with the bulletproof cup.
Well, that's not really naked when you have a cup over the...
I mean, you know, the cup comes off later and you just see him from the backside naked.
Right. But they... I forget the connective tissue that takes us from... Oh, they... Rabbit, we establish his romance because he went to the mall to calm down by petting dogs, the pet store, and then lays down on a vibrating lazy boy. Yeah. And then he runs into
You ever try one of those at the mall?
I would never sit on a vibrating lazy boy at the mall.
What about those massage things where you lay down and they blast water jets at you within that like little enclosed tube? You've seen those things?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so it's like a massage table, but then they close this top thing on top of you that looks like the top of like a tanning bed, but it's like a thick rubber like blanket that encloses like a bunch of water jets. So you're getting massaged by high powered water jets through this sort of like rubber thing. So you don't actually get wet. You're just laying on a table and getting blasted with water jets. They have those at the Not Good Mall here, along with the bank of vibrating lazy boys.
Is the bank of vibrating lazy boys FDIC insured?
I feel like they're everywhere. I think I've seen those at almost all malls. So those have to be a big business.
I'm sorry, it's just the way you said bank. But they have.
Oh, I get it. You were doing the dual meaning there. See, I didn't catch that.
No, the FDIC thing was so vague. But they have rabbits sit in the chair, and then they have the cultural attaché, sit in the other chair, and they talk about stuff. And there was an earlier bet that was established by Farva that he would chop off his own pinky with a shovel. If he lost this bet, that he would have sex with the cultural attaché first. And it's hilarious because we were introduced to the cultural attaché, and then she actually comments on how attractive she finds Farva, which is supposed to be funny because why? And
it's a joke. It's everyone's favorite Entourage character, Sloane. You never watched Entourage, did you?
Nope.
Yeah, she's a Genevieve French-Canadian accent where you can't understand anything she says.
Oh, wait, no, that's not true. I watched the first season of Entourage.
I don't know if she was in that or not. I didn't really watch much. Oh, my God, she was in Don't Mess with the Zohan. I forgot. She's all over the terrible accent spectrum. Have you seen that one?
No.
Oh, my God, that is a movie that cannot possibly hold up for 1 second in 2019.
Wait, the way you say that makes me believe you felt like it held up when you watched it.
No, see, it's an Adam Sandler movie, and those don't have a long lifespan in the first place, but it is basically an Adam Sandler movie about Israel versus Palestine.
Whew.
It
Whoa.
Is something else, my
no.
friend.
No.
And it's all a bunch of white Adam Sandler people being Israeli.
Nope.
We should talk about that. If we're really taking 2019 down into the gutter as our theme, Don't Mess with the Zohan is like, that would be the peak of the year.
There are gutters and there are unmaintained sewers. And I feel like we are good enough for the gutters.
We're good enough for the gutter? Is that what you just said?
Yeah. You know, have some self-respect. But the thing about this... thing is they set up, of course, that there is a Farva at her office where we are introduced to later, where there's a French-Canadian Farva, and they take that very literally. I wish there was a little more finesse on that execution, but whatever.
Lonnie LaLouche.
Yeah. But I don't know. Farva drives into some cans of things and knocks them over, and Rabbit laughs at him.
yeah. And basically, the way this goes is they have a spat with the local fellas, and then the local fellas I believe the next scene is the local fellas put a bear
yes
in the station to try and screw with them, which is in terms of the way pranks go, locking people in a room with a bear and a bunch of raw meat, probably a little over the line.
I believe the characters themselves in the movie had tried to argue the point that this was over the line.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the Mounties kind of conceded that a little bit. But, yeah. And then as retaliation, they throw smoke bombs through the windows of the Mounties' house or whatever while they're watching hockey. And then while they're unconscious, take them out into the middle of the forest, naked, painted red, white, and blue, and leave them.
Yes, and then they do a montage of all...
Oh, they steal their uniforms, and they want to go embarrass the Mounties by ruining their good name. Similarly to the way in the first movie they put on the clothes of the local police and run around peeing on people's things and destroying stuff. This is where the movie really turns into the same format as the first movie, which is... I don't know. It's kind of fun that they did that, but at the same time, like, it's, they don't subvert it as much as they probably should have.
No, no. This is not the deft, delicate execution of walking the line of, like, doing the things that people appreciate about the first film, but in a new and unexpected way that makes them appreciate the fact that it's a sequel and not just a rehash of the previous thing they had already seen. They fell on the rehash line of this one, in my personal opinion, as an uneducated and unsophisticated movie reviewer for a podcast.
I think we've already added more sophistication than is warranted for this product.
Yeah, but there are things that I honestly did laugh at parts of this montage. At first, I was like, oh no, this is bad. This is real bad. And the first few, minute and a half, 2 minutes, whatever, they're not great. When you get to Foster and Mac doing the meow bit again with Jim Gaffigan, at first I was like, they're just bringing this back to do all the same stuff. But then they did subvert that one a little bit, where they tried to make it seem like they were actually stupid enough to have discussed the fact that they'd done this before, and that was just to get his car so that they could strand him on the highway.
That they were even like, he's like, dude, I've said so many things to so many people. Why on earth would you think that I would remember that? And you're like, oh yeah, good point, because you guys are ridiculous and terrible. But then, yes, it is all a silly ruse to steal his car.
Yeah, so that was funny. Like, as much bagging as I'm doing on them for rehashing things, it was funny because they did take this and then twist it enough where there's actually the characters in the film acknowledging the reference to the first film. Especially with Jim Gaffigan being in on this joke up until the point where you realize, oh, he wasn't in on this joke. He didn't realize that they were just going to take his car. Then you have, what was it? Jay and Mac on horses with the spinning siren light. And at first I was like, this is stupid. Like, this isn't funny. Like, just having them on horses so that you can say they're Mounties and they're mounted police. Like, that's not a funny joke. But then when they get to the car, and they start doing the French Canadian thing where they pretend like they can't speak English, they just start throwing out random French words that are Cordon Bleu and Chateau Marmont and like Grey Poupon and all this stuff. Obviously, we in the audience know better, and you would assume that the husband and wife couple in the car would know better, but they don't seem to pick up on it. But they are mostly distressed by life, by the what was it, the something of life,
the key to life,
yes, the key to life. Oh boy.
The key to life is you'll see, how should we approach it? We don't want to spoil the joke.
Yeah,
for
no.
People who haven't seen the movie, but they say a particular phrase. You know where they have those like optical illusion images where if you look at it one way, it's like a goblet, and if you look at it another way, it's like two people looking at each other. They do that, but with words, in a terrible French Canadian accent.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. This is the magic eye of Canadian accents, but it's pretty funny actually the way that they wind up doing the scene. I was laughing, and it is juvenile. Like, it is incredibly like silly and juvenile.
Because they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. And then at the end there, when they yell at the Americans for thinking dirty thoughts, you're just like, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, but then they all get busted except for Mac and Farva. By the Mounties coming back and confronting them, and Rob Lowe and the attaché walking in at the same time, and they go through all the stuff, and
impersonating an officer, basically. He's basically saying, you guys and your pranks have gone too far. Rob Lowe is officially the one coming in saying you've gone too far. We're going to shut this down because you impersonated police, so we're gonna get you fired. We're going to take back our chunk of Canadian Vermont, and then put the Mounties back where they belong. And then, meanwhile, Mac and Farva are sitting in a car, hiding. And there are jokes. Farva accidentally tries to chase down a speeder, crashes into a light pole.
You're skipping over...
Am I skipping over something of note?
Well, it's just that Farva is... He's so good at being obnoxious.
Mm.
Just incredibly obnoxious. He is listening on his headphones full blast to music, and he is shouting because he's listening on full blast. He doesn't understand how loud he's being. And so he's shouting, "Have you heard the new Kanye?" And then he talks about how he likes to have mint gum when he's on the road. But it's fruit gum when he's
on the radio.
It's just
they should make a black mint gum.
No, they shouldn't. But it's so good how annoying he is at this. And this, of course, makes Mac want to leave the car. He doesn't really need to pee, but he just wanted to get out of the car. And then the speeder comes by, and Farva like hops into the Canadian squad car and then drives immediately into a pole. And Mac has to go rescue him. And he does three puffs of airway breathing, part of CPR, which apparently was enough to revive Farva. And Farva gives him what he describes as a shocker.
He gets goosed.
Yes. It's not a shocker. But anyway, they exchange some pleasantries about that, and then they uncover the duck blind material that was hiding more contraband, and AK-48s, which are one more than AK-47s.
That is an incredibly stupid like Spinal Tap-esque joke in this movie, but
it's perfect. Okay, that kind of joke is perfect for what I would expect from Super Troopers. It's the other French Canadian stuff that I don't really care for, but they get this contraband, and Rabbit is watching it when everybody else is going to go meet up with Brian Cox, who is at Chicanery, which is a restaurant that is the Canadian take on Shenanigans, which is the goofy restaurant with all that stuff on the walls, which
I got karaoke there too.
Yeah, which is a reference to the first film, and there are a lot of references to the first film in the scene, because Farva is offered a liter of cola, mm-hmm. and he takes them up on that offer, and there's a punch card.
He says, "You have that here." Like, he doesn't even know what that means.
Which is funny for him, because he's so gung-ho American about everything else, but for some reason he is obsessed with the idea of a liter of cola.
Well, he quickly loses his obsession with the idea of the liter of cola, just because he's told that if he gets a punch card and drinks 10 liters, he gets a free dessert, much like pumping gasoline into the trash can to get a free hot dog or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And
but yeah, they're going here to talk to O'Hagan about, because they basically uncovered the plan with all of these hidden drugs and things that are illegal in America but okay in Canada. that basically once they're done moving the border, all of this stuff will have gone from being in Canada to being in America without having to actually smuggle it across the border, per se.
Yes. Yeah. Which, like, as plans go, is not actually that stupid. It's just that... Yeah. It's just... I don't know. The details are in the execution of this. Because back at the station, Rabbit meets up with the attaché, who comes in, and she lures him into sex stuff. They realize they need to leave chicanery, but Farva doesn't get his butter tart yule log.
He says butter tart yule log so many times.
they really wanted to sell that, but they said butter tart yule log quite a bit.
What do you think a butter tart yule log is?
I have to imagine that it is a yule log with butter tarts on it, like as fake mushrooms, because a butter tart is not that big.
What is a yule log in terms of desserts? Oh, it's one of these things.
Yes.
Spiral cake.
Yes, like a Swiss roll.
Butter tart. So like a vanilla version of it maybe would be a butter tart Swiss roll.
No, like a butter tart is a specific thing, so I have to imagine the butter tart is not actually in the roll. I have to imagine that it is in addition to it. It is some part of it.
I typed in butter tart and I get 26 great Canadian butter tart recipes as the first result from Food Network Canada.
Yeah, but part of the butter tart thing is that they're small. They're really tiny.
Mm-hmm.
So
the yule log looks quite large.
Yes. So proportionally, I would anticipate they try to make it seem like the butter tarts are like mushroom caps on the log.
What if the yule log was stuffed with butter tarts?
Would be... I don't know. Complicated. We should petition the YouTube channel Binging with Babish, where what's his face executes different dishes that are in movies and TV shows. And we should be like, please make the butter tart yule log as mentioned in Super Troopers, and then
we never really get to see what it looks like.
Yeah, well, but that's part of the fun, because hopefully he will just figure that out, and then we can just go, oh, sure, fine, or no, that's not what I think it would be, and then we're safe and we don't have to do anything. But that's my master plan. But they get back to the station and they find that it is empty and all the stuff is taken, and they look at the dash cam from Rabbit's cop car and they figure out that he was lured into sex with the cultural attaché, and they
lured.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's very obvious if you're in the audience what is happening. It is for some reason not obvious to Rabbit, but whatever. Then they drive after to go get them, and as I had mentioned to you in the Slack earlier, bright blue LEDs with the camera sensor that is not, I guess, calibrated for this, it freaks out and you get a black halo around all of your lights. So it goes white, hot core, black, and then blue around the fringe, which is one of the things that is a bad thing about digital, but one thing that you can correct for if you know what you're shooting. So I have to imagine that somebody made an oopsie.
No, this was shot on Alexa, so there's no way that could have happened. So it must be you that's crazy.
Yes, it's me.
I mean, according to IMDb, it was shot on Alexa. I have no proof of that.
Well, I mean, whatever they shot it on, there is a sensor error. There is no reason there should be a black halo around the white hot core of the light. But
let me see if I can find a behind the scenes photo just to verify the camera used here.
Zoom and enhance. But
enhance.
They go chasing after where they think they've taken Rabbit, and they miss the turn, and there's a confrontation about the, I don't know, feminine upsetness of Thorny, which is, again, going back to what I had said earlier, not funny. So you could have, just clip it, just cut it out of the movie. But they pull off and they get to the sawmill, and Rabbit and the cultural attaché are tied to the saw. The Mounties confusingly confront the guys because they thought that the Mounties were in on it, but the Mounties aren't in on it. they were just not aware of what this plan was that was going on underneath their noses. And it turns out that it's all Rob Lowe's fault. And it's Rob Lowe and his stripper escort employees that are behind this. And they get everybody to drop their guns to save Rabbit and the cultural attaché. And then the cultural attaché says, oh, you know, I was just going along with it, blah, 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 blah. But then there's a double secret super, it turns out, when she was actually like a Toronto, Ontario principality, whatever, agent. It doesn't make any... It's the contortions they go through. But
she was attempting to infiltrate the dealer and find the supplier is what she was doing.
Yeah, and they messed it all up. As witnessed in insert 100 other stereotype films, there's nothing that would be cliched inside of a Broken Lizard film, but they have Farva do a distraction, which enables Mac and Rabbit to get the AK-48s, and they are able to shoot the cow, the Lavoche, which falls on Rob Lowe and his henchmen and knocks them off of the precarious and questionably reinforced wood framework that they are standing on top of, and they are caught.
Yeah.
Except then Rob Lowe stands up again to challenge Farva to
fist fight. He's got in a fist fight because just like the confrontation at the end with the local cops of the first movie, got to be a fist fight.
Except this one's
although
worse.
They blew their usage of Big Bear, the song from the first movie, earlier in this movie when Favre was actually being chased by the bear into the toilet.
Yes, and in this scene, they just have Rob Lowe take teeth out from the front of his mouth because he's a former hockey player and blah 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 blah.
Sixth highest scorer of all time.
He's captured, and then Rabbit is rescued at the very end, except not really. The wheel ticks one more time right into his stuff,
junk.
Yes, junk. Junk is great. And then they have the governor and everybody show up for this bust, and you know, blah 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 blah.
The Mounties are basically saying, like, you know what? We hated these guys, but they saved our lives. They're real good dudes, and let's not be so angry about this whole, you know, transition thing where we're going to become Americans now. Because if these guys are Americans, that's okay with us. And basically, Governor Jessamine comes in and goes like, "Yeah, you know, about that whole like hiding drugs all along the border thing here. We are going to postpone all of this until that's found, and possibly indefinitely. So sorry, you're all still Canadian." And then the Mounties, you know, go back to cursing at the Americans, as they should do.
Yeah. And this is... Rabbit, of course, is actually in love with the double secret, super double agent lady who had been playing the cultural attaché. She does not speak in an affected French-Canadian accent, but...
She just has a regular stereotypically Canadian accent.
good for her. But they sort.
I think she's actually Canadian, but yeah, she's playing it up.
Yeah. Well, everyone is playing it up. There is no authentic French Canadian accent that occurs in this film. But they have them. They have Rabbit taken away in the ambulance, and they have to shave his balls in order to use stitches for the nick that had occurred, and they're screaming from the car, but everybody else is fine. And then we get credits, and we get the Fred Savage scene that we were teased with earlier when we heard that they were kicked off the force because of what had happened with Fred Savage.
Just like in the first movie where we saw the behind-the-scenes car footage of Farva fighting with all of the students, we see a scene with some very high quality body cams, as you pointed out, from everyone's perspective, filming while Fred Savage attempts to rescue a cat from a tree, which he does so. It even falls and then lands on his feet, much like a cat would, but then gets hit by the fire truck.
Yes. Yeah. And then this explains why they had a Fred Savage incident. And then we get some outtakes, and then at the end of the film, Farva takes the pinky toe that he had chopped off with his shovel and puts it into a smoothie and then drinks his pinky toe.
I would like to go back briefly to the outtakes. The very last outtake with Will Sasso attempting to find his incredibly bad French-Canadian accent made me laugh probably more than anything else in the entire movie.
I mean, I feel bad for Will Sasso. Is there no other...
don't feel bad for him.
Is there no other thing he could do? Well, no, I mean... Like Mad TV, and then what?
He was Curly in the Three Stooges movie.
Oh God, I forgot about that.
Remember, it's got what's his name from Will and Grace in it, and it had the guy who played Mo was in a bunch of stuff, but he actually disguised himself very well in that movie.
Yikes!
What was it?
Who directed that?
I feel like it was probably Jay Chandrasekhar.
Oh, God.
Let's find out. Three Stooges, 2012. Sean Hayes. Oh, it was the Farrelly Brothers. Never mind.
Oh, well, the Farrelly Brothers.
Oh, God,
Brothers.
That's right. Yeah. The guy who played Mo was Chris Diamantopoulos, who was... did you watch enough... What's the show? Oh my God! What's the show? The Silicon Valley show called Silicon Valley. Did you watch enough of that to see him, the guy Russ Hanneman?
No, I'm not sure I did. I only saw the first season, really.
He's the guy who's obsessed with his Lamborghini doors and being a billionaire. He's the best character in all of Silicon Valley.
Okay.
He's also in The Office, but you know, it's different.
Yeah. Man, the Farrelly Brothers.
Yeah.
You know, there's some news about them these days.
Oh, is there?
Oh, yes. You see, apparently, back in the day, they used to have a lot of fun with the practical joke of showing their penises to people.
They're one of those groups of people.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, Peter Farrelly liked to show his penis, and Cameron Diaz said she saw it. And that's how you know that they're real creative types.
Who was generous
for Cameron Diaz to say.
Oh God. Who was the first one to really make the news with that particular joke that's not funny?
I don't know. I only recently saw this today, as a matter of fact. I had no idea up until today.
Hmm.
Yeah, and
you were doing some research into various problematic folk.
No. As a matter of fact, the problematic folk just come to me if you just sit on Twitter. It just flows to you like a stream of filth that just you can wade in. Apparently, Peter Farrelly, who is now famous for directing Green Book, the film about racial sensitivity. That had recently won a Golden Globe for, what was it, Best Musical or Comedy? And whereas Bohemian Rhapsody won for Best Drama? I don't know. The Golden Globes make no sense to me. But this is weird. But it's not even the worst thing that's happened today, because apparently the writer of the Green Book movie turned out to be... A bit of a Looney Tunes guy. Anyone interested in that can go Google more, because I don't want to talk about it. You just sit on Twitter and then you just find out that everyone's bad. It's amazing.
No. A couple more stats about this particular movie before we close things up here. This movie was written basically in 2009. They had kind of finished it up there. They had announced they were going to do it in like 2006. But basically, it was greenlit, and the studio, Fox Searchlight, basically said, like, yeah, we're not going to give you any money, so go get your own money. So they did an Indiegogo campaign for this movie that raised their entire their intended goal in the first, like, 26 hours. They raised $4.7 million, I believe was the number I saw on Wikipedia, within, like, the whole span of their Indiegogo campaign, and then they managed to secure a couple million here and there through their various friends and whatnot. But this was a, what, like $13.5 million movie, as opposed to the first one, which was what, like 900,000? I can't remember.
I mean, still by today's standards, that's not a lot of money. But
no, $13.5 million is not a lot of money, especially for. I mean, there's a fair number of names in this movie. They do some stunts and dumb crap, blow up some cars, probably. I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like the cast is probably the most expensive thing, but maybe, you know, you work a little favors, you grease some wheels, but yeah, this is definitely one of those things where you're just surprised by how little it costs to make.
You will be proud to know that this movie was financially successful, and you know what that means in today's modern film industry.
That they say they might make another one.
They have announced a title for Super Troopers 3.
Winter Soldiers.
The Winter Soldiers.
Yes. I saw that. But the other thing that I found interesting was that originally they weren't going to do a sequel. They were going to do a prequel. And it was going to be about their fathers during the Bicentennial. And that was the first...
terrible idea.
Yeah, the first pitch. And they were all going to be playing their fathers, all of the characters from the first film.
See, that's a joke like Farva dying and then his identical twin brother that you haven't seen before coming into play himself.
Yeah, I don't... Like I said, the Broken Lizard guys can be funny. It's just that when they try to do... I don't know how to say this. It's not a concept. But when they try to do, like, things that are beyond reality, let's say, like...
Their jokes should not arc through the entire movie. The jokes should be jokes and then be done.
Yeah, like, they should be jokes in a fairly realistic situation. Like, they are cops and they're doing this thing and there are jokes that happen along the way and they're incompetent cops and so they're incompetent jokes and then finally at the end of the movie they do stuff. But, like, that kind of works. When you do stuff where you're just like, and the universe is this broad, epic place where we can make fun of the way that people say sorry for half an hour, then it's like, no, you guys missed what was funny. Like, you're just like trying to like make something. You're trying to like make a universe, trying to like build a world. And it's like, you guys suck at it. Like when they tried to do that for Beer Fest, that was awful. Like, here's this underground beer club where blah 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 happens, and it's like, no, stop that. No, that's dumb. Stop. No Dust Boot.
You need jokes like who wants creme fraiche?
Yeah.
Nobody? No creme fraiche.
Nobody wants creme fraiche in their coffee. But
no, that would be disgusting.
Yeah.
Nobody even wants that on a bagel. Like, was he getting something else? Like it's still, what are you doing?
I don't know. I think they just wanted to say creme fraiche. But,
yeah, that's good.
But that's the thing is, like, just do what is attainable for you and recognize your boundaries and your limits. And they don't.
No, they had some fun making this. We had a little bit of fun watching it. And I think that is the extent of the relationship we are going to have with the Broken Lizard Industries.
Yes, yes, yes. They're just not... They don't have a delicate touch when it comes to this stuff.
No, I don't think they're aiming for it either. I don't think they're trying to make, you know, a Lord Miller comedy that appeals to a much larger group of people.
No, but at the same time, it makes it harder to appreciate if you were a fan when the first movie existed, because you have probably advanced as a human being between then and now, seeing as how it's been almost, 20 years, basically, like 18 change, whatever. So you are not as underdeveloped as this film is. So that really, like, I think puts a damper on your level of enjoyment. Like, we said, there are still juvenile moments that are funny because the situation that they're in, you can believe that this juvenile thing would be entertaining because Farva's irritating or, like, what other situation is occurring. But there's other stuff in here where there are juvenile jokes where it's just like, this just wasn't thought through, like, to... Mm. Any like formal conclusion about why it was a joke? Like,
I feel like they're doing a lot of ad-libbing though, so I feel like some of it certainly comes from there.
Yeah, but not the Flow of Scotia. What? The Flow of Scotia was like a completely plotted out, like, reasoned thing that would occur over multiple acts of this film. Like, it is.
Yeah, they thought of the name Flow of Scotia and they thought how funny it would be to have that commercial, and then they didn't think how not satisfying the payoff would be to do that over the entire arc of the movie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's like I get like these off the cuff, like impertinent, incompetent, like ridiculous moments, but like when
swallowing
it's
Eminem's soul.
Yeah, yeah, like that's funny. Like it's such a ridiculous trait. Like, but you think that he's this obnoxious character, so it makes sense. But when it comes to like the brothel scene, where they're in there and everything is so heightened. All of the it's a what is it? It is how did they describe it in the film? Like two gender brothel or like unisex brothel or whatever. But there are guys and girls doing the brothel stuff in the same place on the same stage with all of the same people in the bar, and the mayor is in charge of this brothel. And there's beer that has a high alcoholic content, which is apparently like a noteworthy feature. And then there is Rob Lowe using a prosthetic penis as a punching bag, which it's funny to hear me say that. But when you watch it in the film, it's just like he's slow motion pummeling this really awful looking like rubber thing. And so it just doesn't work. And so you're just like, so there's like a certain level of immaturity when it comes to like the M&Ms, and that, whereas it doesn't work when it's like, this is the point of the scene. It's all about this brothel and the way that the brothel politics work and how stuffy the Americans are. And there's going to be a brothel fight. And it's like, no, that's not funny.
I feel like all of the jokes are the same reading level, for lack of a better term. Some are just funnier than others.
Okay. I guess.
They don't go highbrow and then come back down for a poop joke or something. It's all relatively, it's all Broken Lizard's brand of comedy, and some of the jokes land and some don't. There are a lot of jokes in this movie. That's their thing. Some are better than others, as it's going to be. But yeah, you know. The speed bag and the rubber wiener. It's not the best, but it's also probably not the worst.
But I think it's just really all about like how planned and executed some of these jokes are. The ones that are the most planned are the worst. The ones that are like just somebody saying something are, I think, funnier than some of the ones they spend a lot of time on. And I don't know if that is just a symptom of the way they're doing this, where they're writing it and it's funny and then nobody examines that thought later on in the process, or if it is, I don't know, a symptom of they film a lot of stuff and they just edit poorly. Like, I don't know. Like, there's just a lot of stuff in here that's a little like flabby. It's not tightly well connected to anything or funny throughout. And so I think that makes it harder if you're a fan of the original and you have matured in any way over time, even a little. Like, you're going to find parts of this movie not that funny.
Although, I mean, to be fair, and this is more than, again, this is another aspect of being a older, more evolved person now, is that I can't ask you to watch this movie again as many times as you've seen the original. That's just never going to happen. But maybe if you get a chance, or if you're bored, watch it a second time, see what you think. Because I watched like the first, I watched basically from the construction scene most of the way through the end while I was doing something else, but I caught most of it. And then tonight I watched it from start to finish again. And some of the same jokes land. Some of the other jokes still just pass by, but it's still, a bit of fun. So I don't know. Maybe this is another one that changes effect over time. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, I think really the opening scene put a bad taste in my mouth. So maybe the fact that you skipped the opening scene the first time you saw it helped you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, like I said, there are funny parts, but like, are you going to recommend this movie to anyone?
Only if they're familiar with the first.
Okay.
And are willing to give it a shot.
So if someone is a huge fan of the first movie, like Rye Amadon, and...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is right up his alley.
Yeah, he loves it. He loves it. It's his favorite movie ever.
If I run into any of my high school lacrosse pals and they haven't seen it, I'll be like, oh, you should totally check it out. It's hilarious. Because I know they're all idiots like I was and would laugh at stupid things.
Rye was on your lacrosse team?
No. I'm just saying if I run into my high school lacrosse friends...
Oh, I get it.
I would recommend it to them.
I get it.
Rye has very little joy in his life, so I don't think he would laugh at this.
No. All right. Well, I think on that note, on the note of joy and laughter, we should end this because that's more upbeat than usual, where we're just kind of sad at the end.
I'm not sad. There are a couple of funny jokes in this that like I'm going to think of like in the shower over the next few days and just kind of giggle to myself. But you know, it's not a masterpiece of cinema. I don't hold this up the way I hold up the Jump Street films.
No. Oh, speaking of Lord and Miller and Jump Street, etc., have you had the chance to Spider-Verse?
I have not yet seen the Spider-Verse. I was going to try and go this coming weekend. It's still in theaters currently right now, so I'm optimistic that it'll still be there for a little bit longer.
I don't know. Don't wait too long, Dan.
I know. I want to go see it.
Yeah, I don't want to overhype this.
It's not possible to not overhype it. It has been...
Yeah, it's been overhyped by the internet at this point.
It's been overhyped by literally anyone who has ever written a tweet about it.
Yeah,
but let alone the people who have dedicated entire podcast episodes to it.
I think that you will appreciate having seen it in a theater, is all I will say. Mm. And I think that...
Would I appreciate it better if I saw it in 70mm IMAX?
No, because they didn't do any of that in that. But I think you will appreciate it in the theater just because it's going to be an optimal viewing environment for that. But also, I know that you are a fan of 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street. So I think that you will be able to appreciate some of the meta stuff, which you like in your comedies. So
I do. Yeah. Am I going to get a headache, though, because there's no motion blur?
probably not. You'll be fine. You'll survive.
Okay. All right. Well, I will make an attempt to go see the Spider-Verse this weekend.
Okay.
Oh, Super Troopers 2. I wish I had a quote from the movie that I could say, but I don't remember any.
Green ones make me horny.
Blinded by the light, like the song says.